We're back in Dubai now with Chris Voss, the famous ex-FBI hostage negotiator, an expert on all things human relations and negotiations. Chris is currently the CEO of the Black Swan Group and the author of several books, including the best-selling book, Never Split the Difference, which we'll revisit, and his upcoming book for real estate agents, The Full Fee Agent, coming out next month. We'll talk about real estate with Chris. Very exciting topic. Welcome back to the show. Pleasure to host you back here on Kitco in Dubai.
Thanks, David. I'm happy to be here.
Spoke exactly a year ago. Tensions between Russia and U.S. and the U.S. have escalated dramatically since last year. Of course, as you know, the war in Ukraine broke out after we spoke. Here's a comment from President Joe Biden. He said that the world has never been so close to, quote unquote, Armageddon. And he said that we've never been so close to a nuclear fallout, all-out war since the Cuban Missile Crisis of the 1960s. He's referring to, of course, President Vladimir Putin's speech that he made a few weeks ago regarding the escalation of mobilization of Russian troops. Putin did say, and we talked about this offline, that nothing is off the table when it comes to retaliatory force should the West actually intervene.
I think it is necessary to support the proposal of the Ministry of Defense and the General Staff to conduct a partial military mobilization in Russia. I repeat, we are only talking about a partial mobilization. Only people currently in the military reserve will be drafted, prioritizing those who have served in the armed forces and have a particular military specialization and the corresponding experience. Before being sent to serve, those drafted will have mandatory additional training relying on experience gained during the special military operation. The decree on partial mobilization has been signed.
Are we at the brink of Armageddon, or is this tough talk?
Lot of it is tough talk. I mean, there's a relative term here. Like, yes, we're probably closer to nuclear war than we've ever been, but how close is that actually? Because we haven't been close to it in a long time. This is certainly much more of an escalation than we faced in 80 years, 40 years, 60 years. But it still boils down to mutually assured destruction. And when you have relatively rational actors and what smart enough to know what's not in their best interest. Russia, while being very aggressive, is not self-destructive. And I don't see Putin as being a self-destructive guy. He's very pro-Russia. He's very pro-nationalist. He knows what his interests are. And I believe he knows it's not in his interest to create mutually assured destruction.
Okay, well, you're an expert on human, psychology here. Explain to me why he would say, Russian President Vladimir Putin, explain to me why Putin would say things like, we have lots of weapons to reply to the West, quote unquote, if they were to escalate things. He said that the West wants to destroy our country. And of course, he said that military service will apply only to citizens who are currently in the reserve. He's talking about bolstering Russia's military defenses. He sounds pretty serious. Why would he make a public address? These are things that maybe he could just communicate to his generals in public, but he made a point to do this on TV. Why did he do that?
Well, he's communicating to his generals on several levels.
Yeah.
It's very much like an American football coach who makes statements in the media because he's trying to get messages through to his own players. Now, who are Putin's own players? His generals, other politicians, hardliners within Russia that think he's not taking strong enough, decisive enough action. I mean, who's he really speaking to principally with this kind of an address? He's really speaking to his own players in a public way as opposed to making threats against the West. That might be a secondary benefit, but his primary audience that he's talking to is his home audience.
If you were to get in his mind, and that's, believe me, that's something that a lot of people in the public service have been trying to do, what do you think Putin really wants right now?
Well, it's not that hard to get in his mind if you, as long as you don't agree. I mean, the whole definition of empathy is I can state what your position is without agreeing with it, without disagreeing with it. I can just state what it is. Like, I stood up in front of a group here in Jitec today. You know, I'm an American. This is few Americans in a room, largely an international audience, largely Arab and Asian. And I can say, you think Americans are loud, annoying, transactional, and don't care about anybody but themselves. And I saw a lot of heads go like, yeah, that's what we think. I didn't agree. I didn't disagree. And they're more open to talking to me at that point in time.
Okay, I want to sidetrack a bit. Well, I do want to come back to Russia, but let's talk about that. So let's say we're having a discussion about anything. Are you suggesting that the best method of moving the conversation forward is just to not agree or disagree, just to acknowledge?
Yeah, acknowledgement is a good term, but it's openly acknowledging. Like, you want to know for sure that I understand what your point of view is.
Yeah.
Now, the only way you know for sure that I understand it is for me to articulate it, to state it, and then be open, if I got it wrong, be open to correction. If I've got it accurate, let you feel understood, which seems useless. Yet, there's an old advice a long time ago, a guy named Stephen Covey said, seek first to understand, then be understood. What it really is for me to get you to listen to me,
yeah,
you have to feel listened to first. For you to be open to my perspective, I have to deactivate in your brain the statement, you don't understand.
I got two questions for you, okay? So first, let's role play here. We got two scenarios. One, it's just you and me. And then the second scenario is a third party observing us. So let's say you and I are colleagues or friends or, you know, whatever the case may be. Let's say in this case we're colleagues, we're collaborating on a project.
Right.
You and I have a difference of opinion as to whether or not we should do a certain thing. You got one method, I got another method. Now I'm telling you, Chris, I think my method's the best. You disagree. We're at a gridlock here. What's the optimal solution for us to come to some sort of, I guess, compromise or some sort of solution? Because from my perspective, I like you said, I want to feel empathy, but I feel like if I back down a little bit, it feels a bit weak.
Yeah, I'm not looking to make you feel like, that's the last thing I want, is for you to feel like you back down.
Right.
Because then it's going to trigger resentment. It's toxic to the relationship. It's going to create friction down the line.
Right. So, all right. So what should I do then to convince you to take my side? Or should I even try to do that at all?
How about what would I do if we disagree?
Okay.
So the fact of the matter is, which most people's ego gets in their way and doesn't let them think this to themselves, is if you have a different perspective than I do, you see things I don't see, you know things I don't know. Until I know what those things are, I can't be right. We have a saying in a Black Swan group, never be so sure of what you want that you wouldn't take something better. I actually want something better. There's a really good chance if you see something that I don't see, that I need to let you make me smarter. So what I'm going to say is, well, you feel this is the best solution for the following reasons, and I'm going to lay them out. It's extremely likely that I'm going to leave something out that's important because I just don't know. It's even more likely that when I leave that out, having tried to express your point of view, you're going to tell me.
Yeah.
Now I'm smarter. Now if I can get my ego out of the way, I can think of a better solution. And this goes from being oppositional to collaborative. You want to be respected. There's always one thing in every negotiation that's more important to the other person than the agreement. In this particular instance, the person you are portraying or describing is someone that wants to know that they're respected and heard. If they know they're heard, they're much more collaborative. They're much more likely to change their position. You just need to be respected and heard. I'm going to see how far I can get just by respecting you.
How do you demonstrate respect?
By articulating the other side's perspective without arguing and articulating in a way that doesn't make them feel that you disagree. So I might say, well, you think you're right because of these reasons. Well, my tone of voice tells you that I think you're stupid. But if I say, well, you feel that you're right for these reasons. Now my tone of voice says, I'm just trying to understand. I'm not taking a position one way or another.
Difficult to tell tone of voice over text, which is the problem with a lot of modern day collaboration.
Exactly.
And working from home. What if you and I are colleagues, same scenario, but now our boss is observing? Let's say it's a group meeting and he's just sitting there watching. He's not saying anything. Would you change your approach?
No, because I want the boss to see I'm a team player. Okay. Ultimately, a team player enriches everybody's lives. Boss is not looking for me to be argumentative. The boss is also not looking for me to give in. If I can be a team player, not be argumentative, hold my position without offending you, now the boss can send me out into the real world because I'm a great ambassador. I'm not so weak that the boss has to worry about me giving in, and I'm not so aggressive that the boss has to worry about me offending colleagues.
Yes. Generally speaking, the boss, should he be encouraging collaboration here or competition amongst colleagues? I've heard arguments for both.
Collaboration is the best long-term strategy. If you compete with each other, then you're not a great team. You're a bunch of individuals. You may go far as an individual, but you go farther as a team.
One could argue, though, that it pushes innovation faster, does it not?
That's an interesting point. There's two issues. There's the innovation and there's the implementation of the innovation. It's like a great idea. A great idea that doesn't get implemented is completely useless. And implementation is more important than the idea itself. So there's an interesting balancing act. Can I disagree with you without being disagreeable? Can we take another point of view and create a better outcome without the conflict that causes us to never want to speak to each other again?
Let's bring this back to Russia and the U.S. We'll close it off on that segment. We'll move on to your books now, Chris. So Russia and the U.S., let's say we've got Russian diplomats and American diplomats sitting across the table here. What do you think is the most likely outcome of that conversation? Do you think they would follow your approach?
I think those are going to be stupid conversations.
This is going to be personally a stupid conversation. You don't think they're going to be collaborative?
Nobody collaborates when it's a battle of arguments. And every politician that's approaching Putin around the world shows up in his office, gets a meeting with him, and argues with him and tells him why he's wrong. There isn't anybody in there that's demonstrating any understanding. So, and I think I failed on this a lot myself. When this conflict first started, I remember seeing an article in the media that said, dismissive of Russia, saying Russia is basically just Europe's gas station.
Right.
And so I thought, all right, so if that was my position, and I was leading a country that was only a gas station to the rest of the world, providing fuel that the entire world is trying to stop using. Like every country on Earth is trying to get away from fossil fuels. If I was a leader of that country, I would think, I got to worry about how we don't die in the dark and the cold because we can no longer make a living and I can't feed my people. How do I do that? Now, do I agree with how he's addressing it? No, I do not. But if I was faced with a future that was that uncertain, I might take very defensive actions as well that made the rest of the world think I was being offensive.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm protecting my future.
I want to come and talk about Elon Musk's tweets, but before that, what you think is the most likely outcome of this war at this given point? Now, going back to what we said earlier, nobody wants to look like they're backing down or looking weak. Now, Russia, at this point, if Putin just throws in the towel, he's not going to do that. He's going to look weak. He's going to admit, he's going to look like he lost the war. Whether or not he really is, debatable, but he doesn't want to look that way.
Right.
If the U.S. starts giving concessions, that's weak. That looks like they're abandoning their commitments, their allies, or whatever the case may be. Ukraine actually just formally applied to join NATO. And so tensions are escalating on both sides. Neither side's backing down. What's the next possible evolution of this conflict?
Well, this has got to be killing Russia economically. I mean, the weapons that they're firing aren't free. You know, they have to find a way to pay for those weapons. It's draining off their economy. I mean, it's got to be hurting them internally really badly, which on the one hand is relatively good for the West because they're happy to see Russia being weaker by losing all their money on rockets and weapons and bullets in an ineffective war. The cost of that is human life. And at some point in time, even the most sociopathic politician has to recognize the cost of human life is just too high. Now, how does this turn out? There's got to be a face-saving way for Russia out because they're clearly not going to back down. So somebody creates a conversation where there's some sort of face saving involved, then Russia doesn't have to feel defeated and quit.
I've heard this solution, if you want to call it that, more extreme solution. One would argue this is not Russia's war, it's Putin's war. So you just take Putin out. Snipe him out by force, replace him.
I think the West is hoping somebody does that internally. Governments are very slow to take out another leader because then that becomes a two-way street.
Yeah.
If it's all right for you to take out a leader, you've got to be open to having the same thing happen to you. And nobody really wants that door to swing both ways.
Yeah, no, that would be bad if it's officially sanctioned by the West. All right, Elon Musk's tweet, he made headlines and controversy. He proposed a Ukraine...
Elon Musk did something controversial?
Who would have thought?
That's, holy cow. There's an idea.
He maintained his personality. Let's put it that way. He tweeted a couple of weeks ago a proposition, and he made a poll. Russia-Ukraine peace deal. Redo elections of annexed regions under UN supervision. Make Crimea formally a part of Russia. Water supply to Crimea assured. Ukraine remains neutral. So these are the conditions he's laid out in this poll. Most people voted no. He's caused a lot of controversy in Ukraine in particular. People are saying, no, we don't. But the pro-Ukraine side are saying, we don't want a peace deal. At this point, Russia needs to be heavily penalized, sanctioned. Peace is out of the question right now. We're not trying to make a concession here. We're trying to punish Russia.
How would you interpret this?
Well, first of all, I'm glad he did it. I mean, somebody's at least getting this out into the open conversation. You can float a proposal to start a conversation. A controversial proposal, if it reduces the number of people that are getting killed, because now people are talking as opposed to killing each other, I like that he did it because at least it starts a conversation in open public discourse. The other thing that's good about a proposal that the other side is going to say no to, they're more likely to counter with another sort of proposal. They'll say, no, no, not that, but this. Now the conversation is continuing. So I like that he did it. No other politician, everybody wants to go into Putin's office and tell him he's wrong.
Yeah.
How far is that getting anybody?
True. Well, let's talk about your... No, we're not done yet, Chris. I want to talk about your book.
You're letting me escape. You're still holding
yeah, exactly.
All right.
We haven't negotiated your release yet.
Right.
The Full Fee Agent. Let's talk about that book. It's coming out. It's about real estate. I didn't know you were into real estate, Chris.
Well, you know, residential real estate agents, what business are they really in? They're helping people with their hopes and dreams for the future. These are strenuous times. There have been no shortage of polls that said one of the five most stressful events of anyone's life is either buying or selling a home. All these conversations for residential real estate agents are stressful, tough, difficult conversations. So this is just one more avenue where the Black Swan Method can help people have smoother conversations that come to a good outcome sooner, and people aren't upset with each other.
Do you feel like people get upset a lot in real estate transactions, Chris?
Constantly.
Yeah. Give us some examples.
In the United States, a Los Angeles mansion is up for sale for $7 million. They come to an agreement. They have inspections. And somebody has to fix a water pipe for $1,500 and both sides refuse to do it and the deal falls apart. I mean, big real estate deals fall apart all the time over really small issues because both sides have gotten so angry through the process that they'll destroy a $7 million deal over a $1,500 repair.
Wow. Okay. I mean, is that just ego, or is that what is that?
Well, people get their feelings hurt through the process because real estate agents, when they get a signed agreement, a big mistake that a real estate agent might do is tell the buyer, you got the house. Well, you didn't get it when you signed the agreement because there's going to be inspections.
Yeah.
So the buyer is told they got the house, and 2 weeks later they find out there's a problem that the seller should be responsible for. And the seller's refusing to pay.
Yeah.
So the agent's got to come back to somebody and say, well, you don't really have the house. There's a problem. And the seller, even though being legally obligated to pay, they're not going to do it.
Right.
Now the buyer feels lied to by the agent. Now if the buyer says, you know what, all right, I'll pay half. then they resent the entire process.
Is this is this book mainly geared for real estate agents? Is it also, do you also offer tips for buyers as well to negotiate on their deals?
Well, if you're buying and negotiating your deal, then you buy and never split the difference.
That's another book that everyone needs to check out if you haven't already. Chris, you're also on Masterclass, right? Yeah. You teach negotiations on Masterclass.
Number one Masterclass.
Congratulations.
Number one.
My friends are big fans. You know who you are if you're watching this right now. Chris, what is, we can't summarize the entire 20-hour series here in this interview, but generally speaking, what is the biggest mistake people make in their interpersonal negotiations?
Yeah, going first. Nine times out of ten, if you go first, the other side's going to feel disrespected. Plus, you didn't gather any information.
What do you mean by go first?
All right, here's what I want. This is what I want to pay you.
Okay.
Or here's why you should do what I want you to do. Here are all the reasons to back that tell me I'm right, and therefore, if you have any sense at all, they'll tell you that I'm right also. That's going first with the price or the terms or how you think things should go. That's immediately offensive to the other side. Like, you don't feel respected by that. Secondly, I didn't learn anything when I went first. I mean, by definition, you're going to know something I don't know. I really want to know what that is because I want a better deal than what I had in mind in the first place. And you are my best source of information for getting to a better deal.
Well, you have a Black Swan newsletter that comes out every week. Do you talk about these issues, or what do you write about?
Well, in our newsletter, which is free, you find it on the website, blackswanltd.com, spelled like it sounds. A short, concise, actionable article on how to negotiate the top four no-oriented questions, the best way to use body language. On any variety of topics. It's a concise, digestible article. Also, there's probably links to video. If you want to, instead of reading, you want to look at a video on negotiation topic, you can pick a video instead.
Yeah.
If we've got a new training coming up, we've got a training coming up in New York City next month. We're going to be in Los Angeles early next year. And you want to go to a training and find out about it there.
Real quick, before I let you go, since you brought up body language, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about this. You're in a business negotiation. How should you sit? How much eye contact should you make? Because I've read too much is intimidating, too little. You look like you're nervous. You know, you lean too forward. It's not good. You lean back. You look like you don't care. You know, what's the correct stance here?
Yeah, I mean, more eye contact when you're listening.
Okay.
Because while you're talking, if I make an eye contact, you feel like I'm listening. That's helpful. I have a tendency to look away when I talk just to break so you don't think I'm some sort of psychopath who you know, doesn't look away and doesn't blink.
Yeah.
And since I'm genuinely interested, it's going to come across my body language. Like typically, and I've been doing this most of the time because I'm genuinely interested, I've got my head turned slightly to the side.
Yeah.
And that's what people do when they're really listening. And the talker finds that very encouraging.
Excellent, Chris. I really appreciate your time.
Now you're going to release me, huh?
Yeah, for sure. We've negotiated the terms. You've given us the information that the viewers wanted, and you can go free. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
You for watching Kitco News. I'm David Lynn.
Kitco News special coverage of the Future Blockchain Summit is brought to you by Coin Payments, crypto payments made easy.